If you smell what the rock is cooking. Everybody, welcome to the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host, Dan. I'm here with my gorgeous older brother, Doug. We're here with E. Nasty himself, the master of sexy, Eric.
What's up?
How's everybody doing tonight?
How's everybody doing?
I thought you were going to say the master of things.
No, that would be you, my friend.
Oh, my God.
Now, well, you can both have the role.
Oh, thank you.
Coach, oh, no. Special episode tonight.
That's all Doug.
That's all Doug. It is all Doug. For our 46th pay-per-view retrospective, we've done 46 of these from the duration of the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. And tonight's a special. It's my fourth week in my reign of terror where I've been picking the episodes. And tonight, it's a big one. We're doing, to me, one of the best shows to take place in Philadelphia since WrestleMania is taking place in Philadelphia this year. We're doing Unforgiven 2000.
Nice.
This is back before Philadelphia crowds stopped.
They were hot for this.
I mean, this crowd was actually pretty good.
Yeah, they were hot for this. 100% they were.
Yeah.
They were.
It's funny, like, if you go back to 2000 and you see, because back in 2000, they still had, like, a really loaded talent roster. Because you had, like, at that time, you had Raw, you had SmackDown, you had Sunday Night Heat, and you had WWF Jack, which was all your wrestling shows.
Oh, wow.
So you had four shows that had to be that had to have matches on it. And plus, like, you had your highlight shows and all that too. But these shows were pretty much developed where they had so if you saw, you know, like, especially Jack was made mainly for, a lot of the lower card guys that have enhancement matches.
And metal, too, right?
Yes. Well, Jack was metal in the daytime.
Oh, really?
Yeah. WCW used to do the same thing with their pro show. They would have it during the day. Or during the week, they would just call it Prime. But it was in the same arena and all that.
Same show.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. But, like, you had enough of a talent roster to where, like, you could do that stuff. And you had enough free time because, you know, not everything was 3 hours back then.
No. Nitro became it, though.
Yeah.
At some point.
Yeah. But, like, with the WWF, still, like, they were good with just 2 hours.
Yeah.
So you could tape an hour show beforehand.
Yeah. This pay-per-view is interesting for a few reasons. One, it's one of my – if we ever did an underrated feud countdown, Triple H and Kurt Angle would be on there.
Yeah.
I think for a heel versus heel, and I know – like you said, Triple H was kind of floating around baby at the time.
Yeah.
But to me, Triple H, we had gotten used to, if you're an Attitude Era fan, you're watching, you're binge-watching all the Raws. You would think he is a villain in my eyes after all the shit you've seen him
do. Yeah.
No matter if he's nice to somebody 1 week or not. But him and Kurt together, they kind of made magic here. And the wrestling match, we'll get to it. It's not my favorite, but the build-up and the storyline, and all that, I think it really worked. And for the drama, for the time period, it's like a classic love triangle. I thought it worked.
And you got to remember, because we talked about it.
Eric liked it.
Yeah. We talked about it before because we did SummerSlam. Or SummerSlam 2000. Am I holding the microphone?
No, you go. It's been in my belly this whole time. I didn't muff the audio.
Yeah. When we did SummerSlam 2000, we talked about that triple threat match, which never really was a triple threat match. It was Kurt Angle and Triple H beating the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
Kurt Angle almost dying. Rock finally coming out. Then we get Rock versus Triple H. But that match really was centered around Triple H and Kurt Angle.
Yeah.
Because Triple H even talked about it when he did Impulsive, I think, right?
Yeah, he talked about hurting Kurt.
Yeah. He talked about it. He's like, Kurt and I were so, like, we were the finish. Like, the finish was revolved around us. So him and Rock had to do longer than what they thought they were going to have to do.
Yeah.
Triple H was getting pissed. And he shouted to Earl. He's like, Earl, find out if Kurt's coming back out or not and if he's okay. Or if he's okay and if he's coming back out or not. And so Earl in his earpiece, and, he's got a microphone attached to him.
Yeah.
Goes, all right, what's the story with Kurt? Is he okay? Is he coming back out?
Uh-huh.
So Kevin Dunn or Bruce Pritchard or whoever shouts to or tells Earl, and Earl tells Triple H, he goes, all right, Kurt is not okay, but he'll be back out if you need him to. So I just found that, funny because it's just, because it still turned out to be a really good match.
The match turned out fine, and because Kurt's a pro, Hunter's a pro, Rock's a pro, they made it work.
Yeah.
And that angle drove everything with Stephanie and him kissing Stephanie. And we'll get into where this goes with that angle, but it is nice to get a singles match payoff for this feud.
Yeah.
I do think you could have got a little more mileage out of it if things would have gone differently here. But as a whole, I thought this storyline, kind of one of the more underrated and a good sight to see on this pay-per-view.
Yeah. And it's like, because you're starting, because you're still red hot. I mean, WCW is still around, but they're not really competition.
Yeah, they suck ass at this point.
Yeah. But, you're moving to a new network because USA, USA wanted to move on. So you move over to TNN, which sucked for ECW because that meant ECW was going to get bumped.
And they did.
Yeah, they got fucked completely over. They were pretty much dead after that.
Well, yeah, because they needed the TV deal.
Yeah.
So Paul was shopping around trying to get, whoever. Like, he tried to make a deal with the Disney Channel. Imagine this. Imagine fucking 3 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon, fucking Lizzie McGuire, the famous Jet Jackson, at 3:30. Or no, hold on. Or no, you have to do the cartoons first. All right,
you're
so
fucking up.
So no. So all right. So you get home from school at 3 o'clock, and you have Timon and Pumbaa on. 3:30 comes Aladdin. Then 4 comes Lizzie McGuire, 4:30 Jet Jackson, and then at 5 o'clock you get ECW.
That would have been insane. I wish that would have
been fucking hilarious.
I wish that would have happened.
Yeah.
That would have been awesome.
What was the name of the show, the Jersey? The kid puts the jersey on and he's all... And then all of a sudden he's in whatever game is on TV or something like that.
Oh, I don't know that one.
I forgot the name.
So do you know what I'm talking about?
No. I've never heard of it.
I think I might know what you're talking about.
I never thought I'd say this, but get Mindy on the phone. She know.
I think it's a little before my time.
Well, I mean, you were very little when the show was on, but yeah. But yeah, no, there was a show. Kid got a jersey from somewhere, and like he would put the jersey on, and then he'd end up like they did a wrestling episode with Scott Steiner and Booker T.
Oh. But yeah, Disney ECW would have been fire.
Yep.
Kind of glad it didn't happen though. Actually, I wish it would happen. The main event's a big spectacle of this too. You got a Rock champion. This is what's cool about this show. This is post-Russo, but they're still hot.
Yeah.
They're still hot, and they're still going on all cylinders, and the storytelling's still awesome. And I do all the work around here. And it's The Rock is a returning champion. Don't touch my beard. He's going against Chris Benoit, The Undertaker, and Kane.
Yeah.
And...
And the return of Stone Cold.
Yeah, and the return of Stone Cold. And him, he's hunting down the motherfucker that came to get him.
Yeah. And also, I mean, you figure, too, four titles on the line, one of which is being defended in a cage. So, this was a stacked card, and they found room for a lot of people. Like, Funaki got a pay-per-view payoff.
Yeah, that's insane to me.
Yeah. Back still with the, you know, when you're still in the Taka days.
100%. And I this pay-per-view is good for a lot of reasons. I think this pay-per-view, it shows what the Attitude Era has to offer in a way to where you see everything on this show. You see the spectacle of The Rock in the promo. You see Stone Cold being a badass. You see, like, good wrestling by Benoit, even. You see, like, Undertaker and Kane being badass. And the only thing you don't fully get is, like, a heel Triple H. You get kind of, like, a good guy-ish. But he's still acting like an asshole a little bit, too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
You get all the Attitude Era in one show. You get a great tag team match. But let's get into it, fellas.
Yep.
Let's get into it.
Okay.
Right the fuck now. Not tomorrow, dog.
Okay.
Unforgiven 2000. We are at...
Fresh Union Center in Philadelphia.
Yes, we are, Eric. 19,000, a little over in attendance. The buy rate was 605. And... 605,000. And, we're opening up with Right to Censor, which I do want to get into Right to Censor, but representing Right to Censor, we have Bo Buchanan, the Good Father, Steven Richards, and Val Venus, and they're going against the APA, which consists of Bradshaw and Farouk, and they're going against, or they're with the Dudley Boys. And,
yep.
Right to Censor, I was talking about this with you earlier, Doug, or no, yesterday. And it's crazy that it's the one group, I think most groups, you kind of have, well, everybody, like, kind of made it or they didn't.
Yeah.
Maybe people go different paths, but it's crazy that some of the people, like, for Steven Richards and Bull Buchanan, this is probably the best thing they were ever a part of. This might be the best Steven Richards. It beats Dr. Stevie.
Right.
As for, like, the God or the Good Father, I think he, like, Charles Wright, like, I think he probably prefers even Kama Mustafa.
I was going to say, I think he prefers Papa Shango over this.
Yeah, he's had so many different gimmicks. This is not near the best that he had. And Val Venus, you know, the porn stick, that worked out. It was an interesting group. And I thought it was a good heel group. And I thought it could have even been, like, an upper mid-card act.
Right.
And you better strap the IC title onto Stevie. But... And to me, this is Ivory's best work, even though she's not out there with the group. But when she's doing
it,
she becomes almost the leader. Because that China program was the biggest thing they were a part of. And I do like the Right to Censor, and I think they're an interesting group. The APA and the Dudley Boys are four of the most solid individuals. And you can get it. If it's not going to be a good match, it's going to be a fun little beat-em-up, you know?
Yeah.
And they get to throw around the right to censor. And this only goes 6 minutes, but I do think this is a fun little opener to kind of show what we're dealing with here and show off some quality tag teams.
And what's funny about this match is how, like, the Dudley Boys and the APA started hanging out.
Yeah.
So it was after SummerSlam, Kai and Tai, who occasionally paid off the APA to do their dirty work. Kai and Tai paid off the APA to help them win a match against the Dudley Boys. Now, this comes about 2 weeks after the APA let Kai and Tai know that the check they wrote them bounced. Well, 2 weeks later, it didn't bounce, and they helped them beat the Dudleys. So they did a barroom brawl. At the end of the barroom brawl, JBL and Bubba were singing with each other. Kai and Tai tries to get involved, and then the Dudley Boys and the APA both beat the shit out of Kai and Tai. So after that, they kind of just started hanging out because the right to censor started getting on, started feuding with the APA, and also started kind of feuding with the Dudleys because they did the situation where they were trying to censor Val, or they wanted to recruit Val and censor him. He didn't want to at first. Him and Road Dogg beat Goodfather and Bull Buchanan in a tag match. But after the tag match, Stevie Richards DDT'd Val on the floor, put him in a pedophile van, and drove away.
Really?
Yeah, in a white van.
That's crazy.
And then, like, a week later, the APA's wrestling right to censor. Val Venus comes out, but Val Venus ends up turning on the APA and joins right to censor. So that's how the build to that was.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this was a fun match. I think Steven Richards had a very punchable face here.
Yeah.
And that's the best thing he's got going for him.
Yeah.
He works in this setting. Besides that, I think he's bland undercard guy.
Yeah.
I never really liked Stevie. Yeah. I didn't like him with Raven. None of that shit. I've never really liked Stevie, and I feel bad for saying that.
Yeah.
But here, I thought he was like almost a main event act. It could have became something, especially if Austin was in a different place. Him and Austin could have done something.
Right. And here's another thing that's funny about that. Thank God Vince Russo was not writing this.
Yeah.
Because one of the vignettes probably would have been a fucking porn shoot, and a guy has his pipe and a girl, and Stevie Richards just comes out of nowhere and super kicks the guy. Like, I could almost see, like, Russo coming up with something like that.
Yeah.
Like, super kicking a guy while he's in the middle of doggying a girl.
Oh, my God. Yeah. You're probably not wrong.
I don't think so. So, but, like, you know, and obviously they wouldn't go that far for obvious reasons, but, well, because one, you can't really show porn on TV, on cable TV.
I mean, they chopped Val's cock off not that, like a year or two earlier. But I agree with you. But, wait, do I? Yeah, I agree with you. The right to censor went over in this deal, which is a damn shame.
Yeah, but then they got their asses kicked after, so you kind of got the payoff right after.
Yeah. And Diva get the tables in Philadelphia. And that was like a fun nod to ECW and a fun little, like the Dudley Boys getting to do their shit and fucking in Philadelphia. That was cool to see. It was nice they still got to the moment even though they lost.
Exactly.
I thought this was a fun little affair. I like every single guy involved in this. Like I said, I was a little hard on Steven. He's not, but here I thought he was really good. And like I said, Val and Goodfather, they're trying, but it's like they already had hits in the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
You took away the hits. That's the only thing. You made a choice. It was a choice. And if it turned out to be like I said, a main event deal or something big for like big titles, then maybe. But it kind of felt like Bell might have been phoning it in a little bit.
I think he was, even though he was technically the only member of Right to Censor that was picking up singles wins.
Yeah.
Stevie
felt like he was giving his heart in it.
Yeah, because you could almost tell that, like, he knew that this was his one shot.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's what it felt like. And it felt like Goodfather was just doing his job.
Yeah.
All right. I thought this was fun. I'm going to give it a 6.9 out of 10.
I'll give it 6.5.
I'll give it a 6.5, too. I enjoyed it much. It was a good, solid opener. A fun little thing to start the night.
All right. Next up, we got one of Doug's favorite wrestlers, Taz. Versus Jerry Lawler in a strap match with JR talking shit to the side on commentary.
JR was on fire in commentary all night.
I mean, this is his era. That's why it's like for the AEW kids that are like, JR's an old fucking, you know, it's like, go watch this. JR was in his prime back then. And you like his like kind of like classic play-by-play WCW stuff, like more power to you. I like that stuff too. But Attitude Era, when he was like getting a little cartoony with it, and he was like the voice of the people, and he's yelling at the heel and calling Triple H a son of a bitch and doing all the like good guy shit.
Yeah.
Like he was somebody you wanted to root for, and he was an announcer. You know, you don't get that a lot. The only like that's the three most lovable person. Like you only got that in Gorilla, Bobby Heenan, and him.
Right.
To where it's like you really know and care about. Like, I like Michael Cole. I do. I think he gets shit on way too fucking much. But he's not this fun character. And even when they try to do the heat, like, let's leave that in the past. When they tried to give him more camera time. I enjoy him and what he does as a play-by-play guy. But Jim Ross was like a character on the show that you needed.
Right.
You needed JR on the call. And you need a king next to him.
Exactly.
Even if a lot of king shit doesn't age well, it like he was having fun, and it was the time, and he was having fun, and it, a lot of it was like entertaining and hilarious. He was doing good shit, especially how he would just root for the heels, and JR would be like, "Fuck you."
Yeah.
That is the duo, and it was funny how Michael Cole sat down for a little bit later on, and then when King comes back, it's like, "All right, fuck Michael, get the fuck out of here, Michael."
Yeah, and that's like, because what I found kind of funny, too, is that, like, because around those times for the pay-per-views especially, Michael Cole would handle the backstage interviews, right?
Yeah.
So, and sometimes Kevin Kelly would do it, too, but, and then, like, if neither one of them were available, Coach would do it. Well, when Kevin Kelly got taken out by Steve Austin early in the night when he's like, "Stone Cold Steve Austin, how do you feel?" And then Austin's just like, "Fuck you," and throws him up against a wall. And we don't see Kevin Kelly again until the following Saturday on Jacked. JR, like this whole thing with King and Taz started when Taz was picking on JR.
Yeah.
Because JR, when Taz came back and Taz started attacking people with chairs, and he hit Rikishi with a camera and cost Rikishi the Intercontinental title and all that, JR called Taz a no-good piece of garbage.
Yeah.
Which he is. Taz came out and started, you know, berating JR, tried humiliating JR, and JR slapped him, so he said, "All right, hit. Slap me again. I dare you. Swing, swing." So then Jerry Lawler punched Taz in the face. They had a match at SummerSlam. King won after JR smacked him in the face with a glass candy jar.
Which, if we're being honest, good moment. Fun moment, but not really worth killing Taz.
Yeah.
And you killed Taz there, and the win here doesn't mean much, especially when you needed Raven to do it. Taz needed to be booked like a badass. They fucked Taz up.
Well, and that's the thing, is that like when you're doing kind of like a feud and you know it's going to go a couple of matches, the heel should always win the first match.
Yeah. When you have such a good debut and you beat Kurt, and you look tough, and you look like a badass.
Which they technically did reverse the decision.
I know, but still.
Yeah.
Like you just... That's a fumbled bag. That's a bust on their part. Taz didn't do anything wrong. And I know you don't like Taz, and he's always had the look to where it's hard to get him over because he is small, but it worked in ECW, and also... He could do the tough guy shit. He could have got to a main event at some point.
Yeah.
Not of a SummerSlam, but he could have main evented a Backlash, damn it. And
well, the issue was, and Bruce Pritchard has talked about this, the issue was is that Taz's style, like when he liked to do the overhead throws and suplexes and all that, they told him, they said, look, you can't do the majority of those unless you do them safe. And he's like, well, in ECW, it didn't matter if they were safe or not. They got over. And Bruce is like, this isn't ECW. This is WWF. You have to be safe here.
And I get that, but that also seems like a – is that a story from Bruce?
Yeah.
That seems like a Bruce excuse for we booked him wrong. Which, yeah, I totally believe.
I'm pretty sure that's what Conrad said to him.
But that's what that feels like, is a Bruce excuse that fucking, all right, we fucked up. Let me, I can't blame the almighty Vince.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to blame myself. So, and Russo's gone. So let's fucking, it's Taz's fault.
Blame Taz.
To me, Taz was doing his shit. Taz looked strong in that debut. You could have built off that. You could have made that work. And I know we're all armchair and we're all just fans. You know, I'm just talking my shit. But we have a podcast. It's what we're here to fucking do. And I think that Taz should have been booked better. He was booked wrong. And having him job to an announcer, which King of Memphis, one of the greatest wrestlers.
But it wasn't even in Memphis.
It wasn't
SummerSlam 2000 was, I don't even know where the hell it was.
No, I'm just saying because I said he's an announcer. He is a fucking Hall of Fame wrestler, fucking one of the greats. Jerry Lawler is a fucking legend. But fucking, the fans of the Attitude Era are know him for his announcing, the fans that come in, and fucking, he goes on. You have the other announcer hit him with a candy jar, and this guy looks like a goof a little bit.
Yeah,
you kind of make him look like a goof, and then after that, what do?
Yeah, and then like for the next couple weeks, like if you think about it too, they did nothing for him. Or like the next night on Raw. He loses to Blackman in a hardcore match, and Blackman had JR and King help him.
Exactly.
And then the following week, and then SmackDown, that Thursday, Jericho beats Taz thanks to King.
Yeah.
Then the following week, Taz teams with Naked Midian to take on Chris Jericho and Jerry Lawler and loses in 3 seconds. There's a pattern here.
Exactly. And then you try to put the little Band-Aid on this, and it doesn't even mean much because you need Raven to do it. You have a debuting Raven, which you kind of like, you can debut Raven in way better ways. This is how
it's
you
a hardcore title match, for Christ's sake.
Exactly. And it's fucking...
Take one of them out.
But it's Raven. Imagine were they doing vignettes on Raven?
No.
Imagine the vignettes you could get out of fucking Raven. Like, there's so much you can do with Raven. He's been... WWE is his worst run. He's been better everywhere else he went.
Yeah.
TNA run was better.
Yeah.
Everywhere Raven's been, WCW was interesting and fun. ECW is obviously the best. Scott Levy has been better everywhere else he's been.
He was even better in GWF as the Palm Beach heartthrob.
Yeah. You can do more with Raven coming in this scenario than having him like in this storyline that's kind of dead anyway. And then you also take Taz's shine away again. He needed the clean victory here. And then you have King come back out anyway.
Yeah.
And I can still do commentary. It's like, you kind of just make this dude look like ass. I thought you can do this better.
It made no sense.
This is a good era. This is a really good era. Where you got really good guys and you didn't need to have Rock, Austin, and Triple H in the main event every time. I'm glad that's what sold out the shows, but you had other potential that you could have, you know, like Chris Benoit shows it in the main event.
Yeah.
But you have guys that you could have built on that didn't necessarily get built on. everybody had a character and everybody was a fun part of the show. I will say that. The Attitude Era did that perfectly. But guys like Ken Shamrock, guys like Taz, guys that only hit a certain threshold, to me, could have went higher. I don't know whose fault that is.
Probably The Office. And I say The Office because, like, they only pushed guys as far as they felt like they could be pushed.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons why Shamrock left.
And you know what? Rock's selling so much fucking merch. Austin sells, it's the biggest stars. Triple H is a phenomenal heel. Like, I don't blame Mick Foley's like the best underdog. I don't blame for having Undertaker's the most solid motherfucker and the most company guy of all time. Kane's consistent. I get the main event scene of WWE. I totally get it. But you did have guys underneath. Like, everybody, because everybody wants to bash WCW.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, everybody, like, oh, these guys only hit a certain. But you can't say it wasn't similar in WWE. Like, Benoit and Eddie had to wait for those guys to leave to reach that mountaintop.
Right.
Those guys had to go first.
I think with Taz, or in Taz's case, Taz had a really bad neck.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know there's other factors, too, that took him out of the ring.
So, and Taz, like, if you look at how Taz is built, Taz really has no neck.
No.
Like, if you look, like, the normal human body, like, when you're standing up straight, you have your head, you have your kind of throat, neck area and all that, and then you have what's starting into your chest.
Yeah.
If you look at Taz, you have his head that is pretty much built into his body.
Yes.
Like, there's no neck there.
Which, you know.
Like, you don't even know if Taz has a throat.
But, by the way, good for Hook. Because his mom's genes really fucking, he don't look nothing like his father.
Yeah, no.
He works like his father, which, you know, is interesting. And I do think Hook has all the potential in the world. Put some beef on him. But I do think Hook has all the potential in the
but
world.
But I'll tell you, and here's what's funny, and I don't know if they're going to really do much more with him, because Jericho will put guys over. It's just up to everybody else if they want to or not. And that Action Andretti is a good example. I'm not going to say anything. Because Chris Jericho put over Action Andretti like a year and a half ago. And nobody has put Action Andretti over since.
Yeah.
But Jericho doing the job for Hook is Jericho's way of saying, all right, he's got something. Now it's just up to the other people if they want to do the same thing or not.
Well, and Hook does got something. Hell, he worked a better fucking title match with Joe than Wardlow does. And Wardlow should be the guy.
Yep.
You know, like, that's truth.
Yeah.
And I know I've talked to you about AEW, but fucking Samoa Joe and Hook was a very good, sellable, believable match for something that should not be believable. And I know Jim Cornette would probably strike me to the fucking ground because Samoa Joe looks way more intimidating than Hook. But that was a really good match that fucking Hook looked awesome in. He sold well, and he looked, like, legitimately tough. And it's like, oh, my God, this kid could get something over on fucking this big, tough world champion Samoa Joe. Wardlow couldn't do that, and Wardlow's a beast. That's a big fight feel. Wardlow and Samoa Joe should not be – there shouldn't be a main event that's not that, if that's on the card.
Right.
The fact that that's the world title match and that's not the main event says something in its own right. But
by the way, it went first.
Exactly. And it's just, you know, and Hook looked better. That's my point. So Hook has a lot of potential and a neck. That was the main point. Hook has a neck.
Yeah.
Which is nice. Taz, and there's other factors about Taz, but I do have a point with the mid-carders, though, I believe.
Okay.
With some of them that, no, like, that is, I think that's a good point.
Yeah.
That it's like, some of them could have, Shamrock could have fucking, you know, like.
It depended on what the off, because if you go to, territories are going to be the same thing. And I know, like, at some point we're going to be talking more territories, I'm guessing. The territories were the same thing. You go, the promoter looks at you, and the promoter decides if you get on TV or not.
I know, but these guys have been on TV, and these guys have been doing good shit. That's my only thing. You see them doing good shit underneath. But also, I'm kind of, now that we're talking about it, I'm also talking myself out of it a little bit, because The Rock, Stone Cold, Triple H, those guys were so damn hot, and you could get a good match out of them at any fucking time, and you can get a match that the whole crowd's going to cheer for. Why risk
And it wasn't, they weren't always working each other. They had different dance partners. Remember, in 2000, in that summer stretch, and I'll say Fully Loaded 2000 is a perfect example. Rock worked Benoit.
Yeah.
Triple H worked Jericho.
Yeah.
You had Undertaker and Angle working.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
So, three really good matches, by the way. And Undertaker was working on a bad knee.
I will, 98 to 2000, though. It does feel like that main, and yeah, they were working different guys and they had different dance partners, but it felt like the main event had to, and the world championship scene had to consist of like that six of like the Trinity, fucking Triple H, Austin, Rock, and then like Undertaker, Kane, Mankind, or a Big Show or something like that.
Yeah, no, you are right. Like that had to be it, but those were the guys that were getting like,
and it makes
those
sense.
Were the guys that were most over. They were the highest paid guys in the company because they were selling the most merch.
But wasn't Lex not and fucking Hogan not in that too? And that's my point is WCW gets knocked for that. For having the series. And I get it, Roddy Piper, and that they weren't putting on the best matches, but they were bringing people to the building.
I don't know why WWF doesn't get knocked for it and WCW does. I think it's also because The legend has always been WWF's main event was always better than their undercard, and WCW's undercard was always better than their main event.
Yeah, and I get that, but I feel like WWF also had a pretty stacked, more of a stacked middle than people would think. Like the D'Lo Brown, like they had certain workhorses and certain keys to the pie. The whole show was good. Except, like, look at this. This is a perfectly paced show.
Yeah.
With good, like, good singles matches, a great tag match, a great main event. Like, this is a really good paced show that shows that they have everything all across the board. Now, and I get it. Why do, you know, Jericho when he's still, you know, kind of new in the main event when you can do Rock and Undertaker or something? But still.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? It's just, I thought they did have other guys that could have hit the main event scene at some point and never really got there.
Yeah. It's funny because, like, they knew who their top merch sellers were.
Yeah.
So I think it's just like, okay, these guys are working top. They're making us a lot of money.
Let's stick with them. I don't blame them.
Yeah.
And they were really good matches. You can't go wrong with the Rock and Triple H and shit. Like, and they were introducing Kurt Angle and stuff. So, yeah.
And they were also both still young. You know, 2000, Rock was only 28.
Yeah.
Hunter was only, oh, Christ. Hunter
he was young.
Yeah.
But whereas fucking Macho Man Luger and all them were old.
They were in their 40s.
Yeah, it all makes sense. It does. And this is a perfectly paced card. Now, what are we going to give Taz and Jerry Lawler? I'd only give this about a 4. I think this is a low spot on the show.
I would probably say about a 3.5.
I give it a 1. I hated the ending because I thought Taz should have won it clean.
So you agree with me, Eric?
Yeah. Raven didn't need to be there. It made no sense. I know they wanted to introduce him, but there's other ways to introduce him.
It felt like they did it just so a few people in Philadelphia could be like, ECW! Fuck
yeah! Well, they should have introduced him during the hardcore.
I don't think he even got a reaction.
They didn't get a reaction,
no,
really.
Not really. By the way, Triple H at this time was 31. So he was technically still young at the time.
Yeah, youngish. He's getting old. All right. Next up, we have the Hardcore Battle Royal for the WWF Hardcore Championship, where we have Steve Blackman, Perry Saturn, Crash Holly, Al Snow, Ol Funaki with a pay-per-view match, and Big Test with old Trishy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Terry Runnels and Trish Stratus, a teenage boy's dream right there.
Oh, yeah. Trish Stratus. Which, I mean, and I don't want to be that guy on this show. age completely differently, though.
Yeah.
The two women.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no. Trish aged like fine wine.
I saw
Terry Runnels aged like cottage cheese.
That picture of Missy Hyatt and Terry going around.
Oh, yeah.
God bless. And listen, I look like shit now when I'm 26. So...
Yeah.
It's all fun and love, and I love Terry as a character. Nothing but love from the show,
yeah.
But yeah.
No, I mean, and they were both great. You know, Missy Hyatt and Terry Runnels, I love them both.
Yeah, Missy Hyatt's a first lady of wrestling.
Yeah, exactly. But I can only imagine guys that saw that are like my age, or not my age, but even like 45, 50 now, that were teenagers back then when they were over.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, my God, we used to masturbate to them? Like, what the fuck?
And Trish Stratus still has it. You know, she's not like what you – like, back then she was like a whole fucking bag of tomatoes. But, like, for a fucking 40-something-year-old woman, she's in great shape.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
now – and then you had that certain type that, you know, grew up to her. They're like, yeah, I used to masturbate to that.
Yeah, that's me.
Oh, my God.
I'm just kidding.
I did.
Well, at least you weren't doing it to Kurt. But is Stephanie look good at this?
Or Ivory.
All right, we're pigs. I thought the match was good, hardcore fun, good Crash Holly, good fucking Blackman. Some of the wrestling was clunky here.
Yeah.
You can see why hardcore wrestling can get clunky and it gets a little awkward, and especially because like Funaki and shit were trying to do moves, but it really wasn't working to land it, and people were selling weird. Wasn't the best worked match, but it was fun, hardcore, like fun with a bunch of mid-card guys that are fun.
And what's funny too
is
that like they used to have the gimmick with Crash Holly because they used to call him Elroy Jetson, right?
Yeah.
And they used to say, oh, Crash. They did a stint one time where Crash was at WWF New York, and he was trying to buy a drink, and he gave his ID to the person, and they're like, sorry, sir, you're not old enough. Crash Holly was 29 years old at the time, okay? So basically, like, they're trying to pass him off as, oh, he just barely, like, he just got off of puberty. Like, he just turned legal age. Or whatever, that, like, you know, he's still a young fella. He was almost 30. And I always found that kind of funny. It's just like, and by the way, he started wrestling at 17.
Really?
He started wrestling in 1988.
You were only 3.
Yeah.
Well, you were 2. I was 3.
Yeah. And God bless, you know, rest in peace, Crash Holly. Miss him, unfortunately, died way too young. Because, you know, he died a couple of years after this.
Yeah.
So, R.I.P.
R.I.P., lost legend. One of the best.
Yeah.
Crash Holly's the fucking man. And
True underdog.
And I really enjoyed this match. Steve Blackman with a good win. I'll give it a 7 out of 10.
I'd say 8, just because I they can hear me. I got a big enough mouth.
Okay.
Like, I would say 8 just because I was a fan of not all the guys in here, but at the time I felt like they all played a good part.
I'll give it a 7.5. I enjoyed the match.
All right.
It was a nice concept. I wish they did it more.
Yeah. This is a fun, because to me, the shit like this is funner than just the 24/7 rule. It was cool they did something like this.
Yeah.
Some of the
this was kind of a take off that hardcore battle royal at WrestleMania, which was kind of clunky, but it was still fun.
Exactly.
Like,
that's what you get with these.
Like when you had 13 guys competing for the hardcore title and JR was like, you know, when Viscera held the title for so long, he's like, all right, this is good for everybody that has Viscera in their office pool.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Next up, we have a really good singles match with X-Pac and Chris Jericho.
Yeah.
Which, this was around the time I feel that they were like, Chris Jericho isn't really landing yet. I thought this match was good, though. People talk about the X-Pac feud and act like Jericho really wasn't doing great stuff yet. But I thought he actually did some all right stuff with X-Pac. And this in particular, I thought it really was. X-Pac, I thought, kind of carried the match in ways. But I thought Jericho looked good. I thought it was a pretty good singles match by two really athletic guys. I didn't think it was the show stealer that JR said it was going to be. But I thought it was a fun little 10-minute match. I give it an 8.8 out of 10.
I would say 7.5 just because I really didn't like the finish. Well, I mean, I like the finish, but the fact that X-Pac had to get the last word, like, fuck that.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, when JR said two of the great young stars, two of the great young future stars, Jericho was already 30. X-Pac still had not turned. X-Pac was like 29.
And JR said they're both in their 20s, too.
Yeah.
He specifically said they're both in their 20s.
Yeah. And it's like, nah, Jericho just turned 30. The Alliance Stack of Oklahoma shit.
He's upselling both of them. That's not funny.
Yeah.
It was.
I give it a 7.5 out of 10, too.
Yeah.
It was a fun match.
Or go ahead, Eric. I'm sorry.
He already went.
No, I said chemistry together. So yeah, it was fun. It was a fun storyline.
They definitely did. And it was funny. It's like the one time when Shelton Benjamin wrestled Ric Flair at that Backlash in 04.
Yeah.
And he talked about Shelton Benjamin only being in his mid-20s. And he said that the first time Flair won a title was in 1975, the year Shelton Benjamin was born.
Yeah.
Do the math. 1975 to 2004. 1975 to 2005 is 30 minus a year, that's 29. 29 is not your mid-20s.
Fucking JR. He's trying to make everybody younger there.
Yes. So imagine him trying to do that shit now. Being like, oh, yeah, the Young Bucks really are young men. It's like, and be like, JR, they're almost 40. Well, I'm 75, so that's young to me.
That's pretty good. Is he 75 now?
Yes. Oh,
he probably is.
72.
Okay. That was funny. All right, let's move on. Tag match. To me, match of the night. We got the Hardy Boys, Jeff and Matt, that would be, with Lita showing up later on in the evening, with Edge and Christian, or going against Edge and Christian, in a steel cage match for the tag team titles. I thought this was awesome. These guys are, of course, known for their TLCs and their ladders. I think they did great work in a cage. I thought the psychology of Jeff going out first and them Matt getting double-teamed because of that and looking like the Hardys might lose and Edge and Christian are, like, taking advantage of this.
How rare is that, though, that Matt is the one that has to sell and Jeff's trying to get back in the cage? Because usually Matt being the older brother, Matt's usually the one making the save.
Yeah, Jeff's usually always fucking getting his ass kicked or throwing himself through something.
Yeah, but like it was Matt that was really doing this and doing a hell of a job. Like,
yeah, he was selling
his ass. He got color. I mean, it was fantastic. And then like when Jeff tried to get the key and then Edge put they took the key away. They still kept Jeff out. Edge put the key on his penis. But Jeff finally able to get back in. This, it really was an awesome match. And yeah, they can do a lot of good work in the cage. They proved that they're not just ladder match guys. They can work any match.
Yeah. And,
exactly.
I do enjoy the heel work by Edge and Christian at the time. And the Hardy Boys were the perfect baby faces. This was just the perfect duo. This is the perfect match to put the... This was the Your Attitude version of Midnights and Rock and Roll.
Yeah.
This is the ultimate tag match you put together in the Attitude era. And it just worked. And,
although I would not compare Lita to Cornette.
No. Cornette's way better looking. he fucking pulled off that black thong way better. But no, I enjoyed... I enjoyed the action in this match. I thought it was badass, and I thought, because not only was it like brutality and carnage and shit, it told a story.
Right.
The psychology of the match really worked, and Jeff's like getting out, and then, oh shit, I got out. And like they've done that a couple times in the past. Like that was done in the SummerSlam 2001 match with DDP and Canyon.
Well, Canyon got out, and then he ran like hell.
Yeah, they just let Canyon walk.
Yeah, he's just like, fuck this shit.
But they've used that kind of psychology. But it's a little different. It's way different in this scenario.
There was the no-holds-barred cage match, which was Hogan and Beefcake versus Savage and Zeus. I forgot who was the one that got out. I think it was Beefcake. But he got out, and he spent like 5 minutes trying to get back in.
Yeah. It works, and because it's like you think you're doing a good job by getting out of the cage, but they're like, oh, shit, my brother's in there, and he's getting his ass kicked by himself.
I mean, Matt Hardy was garnering a lot more sympathy than Hulk Hogan ever could.
Yeah.
By the way.
That's a fucking hot take.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, Hogan's big, and, like, he hulks up and no-sells everybody anyway. But Matt Hardy did a hell of a job. Just one more thing, like, first of all, if Cornette ever tried to pull off a black thong, he would probably tear his hamstring trying to take the damn thing off.
You needed to put that in there, didn't you?
I felt like I needed to overemphasize that.
Right.
We're going to get sued.
No.
We're going to get defamation of character lawsuits in there.
He'll understand. He's our dad. All right. I thought the Hardy Boys did a great job of being the underdog babyface that came from the – and Lita hit a hell of a hurricanrana on Christian.
Yeah.
And that's how it was supposed to be hit. And he just fucking hit the floor, and it was intense, and it was like – it looked like it hurt. It was – the whole thing was done perfectly. And I thought Matt getting out of the cage, it was perfect. And the way they celebrated, and to me, this was match of the night. I give this a 10 out of 10. This was you always hear about the steel cage, or the steel. You always hear about the ladder and the TLC and all their other shit. This is right up there with it.
So after
I agree with that.
So Jeff Hardy is the only one of the four whose face never hit Lita's crotch. Another big takeaway. well, because obviously Matt and Lee, I mean, they didn't have to get Hurricane Ronned, but.
Oh, Matt and Edge, you're a piece of shit. I know what you're saying now.
Yeah.
Because Christian was pretty close.
Well, yeah, because Christian, you know, the face has to be in there. I mean, I don't think he had his tongue out and licking.
I was about to say, I don't think everybody blows Rey Mysterio when he does it.
Oh, my God.
He is handsome. Those are thick pants he has.
Those were not thick pants that Lita had on, though. And most of my jeans have holes in the crotch. So.
Oh, my God.
This is because you're fat. Let's move on. What are we rating this? What pants?
I'm giving it a 10 out of 10.
Eric, what do you rate it?
10 out of 10. I enjoyed the match. It was fantastic. The storyline of Jeff trying to get back in, Lita coming down and doing the Hurricane Rana, and he sold it very well. So I enjoyed it.
All right, I'm going to give it a 9.5 out of 10.
You motherfucker.
Well, the reason why is because there was actually, like, this was one of the top matches of the night, but there was another match that I liked better that I'm giving 10 out of 10.
Ooh.
Yeah. By the way, I just got an email from Paul Talker off the air.
Oh, fuck.
Nah, I'm just kidding. That was my eBay.
Oh.
Don't worry, I didn't get us canceled yet.
I mean,
there's going to be about 15 defamation of character lawsuits in the mail tomorrow, but I think they're all addressed to me.
Mamacita.
Yeah.
All right, now we got Eddie Guerrero with his Mamacita, China, and they're going against Big Keish, Rikishi, who's a couple weeks off a heel turn when he does it for The Rock. But he seems kind of
He was kind of heel here, wasn't he?
That's what I said yesterday, and you told me to fuck off, but then you agreed with me after. But, yeah, I do think he seemed a lot more heel. He seemed very heel here. Because I know Eddie Guerrero's a bad guy, so you don't want to see him, like, win and shit. But him and China were a lovable duo.
Yeah.
Those two together was really good shit. That's another underrated story.
And they weren't booing China for saving Eddie.
No. They loved China with Eddie, and they were funny together, even though Eddie was kind of a piece of shit. But that's what made it all work. It was a funny – that was a really good storyline. And Kishi was just kind of overreacting – well, not overreacting. She was costing him the belt. But he almost destroyed the poor woman with his buttocks, Doug. His old ass cheeks.
Yeah, that's not the first time.
And I enjoyed the match for itself, and I enjoyed the story that they told, and I would give it a 6 out of 10. I really would. No, I'm going to go 7.
I'll say 7.
0.2.
0.1.
I'll give it a 7. I thought the story was good. The fact that Eddie is that douchebag, and China is that innocent woman, always going back to him. I thought that was a nice little story.
Me too. But between this and then the next match with Triple H and Kurt Angle, this shit really was prime soap opera back then.
Yeah.
That's what it was all about, fucking entertainment. The sports was good here, too, but there's a lot of entertainment.
The sports was on display more in the Jericho X-Pac match and in the cage match.
And even
in the last match, too.
Yeah. I agree, you fuck.
Well, yeah, you were getting ready to say it, but then I took the words out of your mouth.
I'll put something in the ears. Triple H. We have Triple H with Stephanie.
I thought you were going to go fried chicken again.
Well, you look like fried chicken or a buffalo. We got Triple H with
Buffalo fried chicken.
With Stephanie McMahon Helmsley, who, you know, is just a sweetheart.
Yeah.
Infamous asshole heel. But here she's kind of sweet. And this is the love triangle with Kurt Angle. We got Triple H and Kurt in a no disqualification match with old Mickey Mick, Mick Foley, the commissioner, as a special guest referee. I really talked up this storyline earlier, and I do believe in it. I think it's a great storyline. I do think it could have had a better payoff. I don't love the whole Stephanie, you need to choose. All right, I'll kick him in the balls real quick. And then that's how it's over.
Yeah, like, and then she goes and checks on him and is like, I'm sorry I kicked in the nads.
And it's like, you really, like, they kind of sank this a little bit. Like, it was good, but it's like, SummerSlam, like, this angle was so hot. And it's the co-main event of the pay-per-view. And you kind of just, like, you shit it down the river.
Triple H
and Stephanie together, you know?
Yeah.
You could have done more with this. So the wrestling was all right in it, but I also was getting tired last night when we were watching it. I thought it was good, but I would give this like a 7.5. I thought it could have been a 9.
It should have been a 9, but then like the way, like, the finish was bad. The majority of the match was good, but like the whole finish and then how, like, he basically, he kissed her the way fucking intruders come in and fucking...
Yeah, and then he, like, spit blood at Kurt. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And I remember the night after on Raw, she started bitching at him. She's like, that was too rough of a kiss. And he's like, what do you expect? I just had my ribs kicked in. So, no, I'm not going to fucking, it's not going to be erotic and passionate after I had just gotten my ribs basically shoved up my ass. Like, I wanted to give you a kiss, and unfortunately, you know, it was rough, but I was kind of in rough shape, honey. And wasn't she bitching at him earlier in the night because he didn't give her anything for her birthday and her birthday was that night?
I think so. And she was also like, I think that Kurt might be a bad guy. And he's like, Stephanie, he hit me with a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
Just the way he said it, it had me dying. He was just like, well, I would hope so that you don't like him anymore since he hit me with a sledgehammer. He's clearly not our friend. He doesn't want to come over for Yahtzee night. He's trying to kill me.
So he could plow you.
So he could fuck you. But, no, I thought this match could have been better. 7.5. What do you give it, E Nasty?
I give it a 7 out of 10. I enjoyed the match. It wasn't their best match, but it wasn't their worst match. The storyline towards the end was meh, but it was a good storyline heading into building when it was built up.
Build
up was great.
I agree. Build up was perfect. All right. Our main event of the evening. We have challenging for the World Heavyweight Championship with the world of the WWE.
Don't forget Austin coming out and stunning both Shane McMahon and Steve Blackman after Shane McMahon tried to pin Austin's hit and run on Blackman.
Yeah, Steve Austin did that. And it was good.
And stunned Shane three times. And
Shane stole all three, too, and took a swig of beer for each one so he could spit it out. And it was all a great visual.
Yeah.
And there was just beer soaked all over the place.
He definitely takes a better stunner than his idiot father ever could.
He took a great stunner. And it was really fun to watch. And he just kept getting up and getting his ass kicked again. And Steve, and by the way, let's not – another guy that got his ass kicked tonight, just Joe.
Yeah. And Kurt Angle and Kevin Kelly.
Oh, yeah. I forgot Kevin Kelly got beat up, too.
Yeah.
I wonder who beat him up worse, Stone Cold or Tony Khan. Poor Kevin Kelly got fired.
Yeah.
Better announcer than half the team. But that's not a shot at Shivani or JR. I love them.
Yeah. And we still don't know the whole story because Tony Khan doesn't want to talk about it. Big surprise. But, I mean, moving on, yeah, Austin coming back, you know, everybody was excited to have him back. I was excited at the time because I couldn't wait to find out who the fuck ran him over. Because that was a story that we didn't know if it was ever going to get finished or not.
Were you happy with the payoff?
No, because to be honest with you, I always thought it was going to be revealed to be Triple H. Now, they revealed him to be the accomplice, I know.
Yeah.
Or the man behind, or he's the man that kind of convinced Rikishi to do it. But I always thought it was going to be I thought it was either going to be Triple H or The Undertaker.
Should have been Triple H.
And Rikishi at the next pay-per-view, Austin almost fucking kills him.
Yeah.
When he like runs him over. And it's like, Austin literally almost fucking kills Rikishi. I do think that, that story.
He killed him at Hell in a Cell in December.
Well, Undertaker did to...
Or no. Undertaker pushed him off the... I forgot it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Stone Cold was cool here. We can't forget about Just Joe. One of the greatest workers of all time.
Just Joe.
It was like his one moment of fame, getting to be there with The Rock and Awesome.
Rock
that was funny as hell.
Yeah.
I'm Just Joe.
Yeah, and then Rock just looked at it like, ah, okay.
I think he came up with the Hardy Boys, if I'm not mistaken. I think he's like an indie guy.
Yeah, no, he was friends with Matt and Jeff.
All right. Now the main event of the evening for the World Heavyweight Championship of the World, the WWF, we have Chris Benoit going against Kane, going against The Undertaker, going against the World Heavyweight Champion of the World, The Rock. This is a fun fatal four-way. Chris Benoit looked really good as the technical wrestler, beaten ass. It seemed like he won, but Undertaker had his foot on the rope, and that was the whole thing, and they beat the shit out of him for a few minutes. I thought he looked really good. I thought Kane and Undertaker did their normal badass shit for this time period, and I like both of them a lot. I like American Badass Taker, and I like this version of Kane. And The Rock is a great babyface world champion. He looked great in the end, and I thought this did a good service to everybody. And even Benoit, like, taking the fall, he was the workhorse in the match, and he made the match look really good. So it did not lower his stock at all. And Kane at the end with one of my favorite moves in the history of pro wrestling.
That was hilarious.
The fact that Rock had fucking Benoit down. He's pinning him. And then Undertaker is going to go break it up and keep the match going. And Kane grabs Undertaker's leg and is like, no, word up. Shane is like, I'm fucking tired. My head's bleeding.
Yeah, because he was bleeding in the back of the head, by the way.
Yeah. He was like, we're not doing this anymore. Fuck off. It's like, yeah, he had no reason to just like, he's like, no, fuck. It's like you let him break it up, then you go and punch him in the face. But he's like, nah, we're done. I don't want the title. I'm done.
Well, I think what happened was he was starting to, and by the way, like, it was hit very well, obviously, because of his hair.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, King is the one that pointed out he was bleeding in the back of the head, and you could see Kane also feeling back there.
Yeah.
Right? So what I'm thinking is that, yes, the pay-per-view was probably supposed to go another couple minutes, but Kane's probably just like, can we just call this so I can get my head stitched back up, please? But, no, that was fucking up. Kane being the one to be like, all right, we're out of here.
We're done.
We're calling it.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
I thought
this was a really good main event match that worked wonders. I give it a 9.2.
I'm giving it a 10. I really enjoyed this thing.
For a Fatal 4-Way, because Fatal 4-Ways are hard to pull off and make everybody look good.
Yeah, unless it's a Fatal 4-Way elimination match like they did at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Because that was easy to pull off, even with all the, you know, clusterfuckness.
I do like those.
But this was really good. Benoit did a hell of a job. The Kane spot was hilarious.
It was amazing. It was the best part of the show. Because it, like, blatantly shows him do it. He's just like, nah, fuck it. You're not getting that.
And JR and King are just like, Kane really did not want The Undertaker to win the title. And so, like, he sacrificed Rock winning it. And it's just like, no, he wanted to go home.
He's exhausted and he wants to go home.
Like, it's 11 o'clock in Philadelphia. There's more than likely not a lot of, because this is back when, like, a lot of restaurants would close at 11 o'clock still. I think it wasn't until, like, 2005, 2000. Six or whenever it was when restaurants started staying open later.
Yeah.
So, like, a lot of restaurants would close at 11. So, like, and if you're hungry and you want to go get a plate of, like, chicken fingers or something like that, like, there's not a lot of places to go. And you probably didn't want to go to the Waffle House. So, yeah, he's probably just like, I'm beat up. I probably need stitches. But I want to go get something to eat first, so let's get the fuck out of here.
That's awesome. All right.
Exactly.
Let's give
I'll give it a 9.5.
All right. Now let's give our final thoughts on the pay-per-view and a rating. I thought this was really good Attitude Era fun. I think it highlights everything that's good about the Attitude Era. You had all the big stars. You had Austin. You had Rock. You had Kane, Taker, Triple H. I thought... A young Kurt Angle. I thought everything about this show worked. I give this whole thing a 9 out of 10. I know I give a lot of the matches like 6s and 7s, but to me that all adds up to like a perfect, entertaining, fun show. There was one pee break on the whole show, and JR's commentary still makes it worth staying for. So I thought the whole thing worked. 9 out of 10. Eric?
I enjoyed the pay-per-view from all the Stone Cold segments. From the first interaction with Kurt Angle, I thought that shit was hilarious. And then the segment with The Rock and what's his name, Joe?
Yeah,
and Joe. And then the segment with Shane. I thought Stone Cold made this. He was one of the highlights of the show. He got a big pop in the Philly crowd, of course. And so I give this show a 10 out of 10. It's probably one of the best pay-per-views of 2000.
I really enjoyed this show.
There was a lot of good shit in 2000.
Like, Fatal 4 was good. Cage Match was good. Triple H and Kurt Angle was good until, you know, the end when Stephanie was forced to kick Kurt Angle in the balls. Jericho and X-Pac was good. I enjoyed the hell out of the hardcore thing. I'm saying 9.5 out of 10.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Now, I enjoyed the hell out of this pay-per-view. I like it when we do 2000 stuff. Just 2000, like 99, 2000, 2001, they were still cooking on all cylinders.
Yeah, they were fucking I love both of those years, and they, especially with Austin being back.
Those are the best 3 years.
Awesome. Yeah.
This is fucking awesome. This is fucking awesome. All right, guys. With that being said, this was a lot of good fun. Do you want to know what my last week of terror is going to be?
You've been teasing me with it all day, so I would like to know.
All right. So next week we will have the episode title will be Unscripted Chaos. And we will all
are we going to be naked?
Yes.
All
right. Oh, shit. And we will all be
did I just break something?
That's fine. All right, you're breaking it, fucker. Stop.
I'm just making sure it's so much fun.
All right. So Unscripted Chaos. That fucked up the vibe. Unscripted Chaos.
Well, that was chaos.
You're chaos. We're all going to have different agendas for next week. Okay. We're all basically going to be singing different tunes, telling different stories, painting different pictures, baby.
Grabbing different crotches.
All sorts of shit.
Oh my God.
We're going to start off the show with a 30-minute history lesson from Doug on the year 1992 in WCW. You're going to tell us all about the big workers, the big angles, the titles, who's running the joint. Doug's history lesson will be back for 30 minutes to start off the show. Then, how do you feel about that, Doug? You like that?
You're 30 minutes on the biggest shit show here in WCW history.
I figured it was right up your wheelhouse.
I'm pretty good at shit shows, yeah. I think we're good.
Then we're going to go, and I'm going to list off my top 10 underdogs of all time in professional wrestling.
Okay.
That is going to be the top 10 list. I am going to go through it, and we're all going to talk, debate, speculate.
All right, but Eric and I do not have to come up with a list. It's just
no list. It's just my list, but you're going to be talking about it with me.
Okay.
And then Eric is going to fantasy book all of WrestleMania 40 by himself, and he's going to tell us who he thinks he should win. If night one and night two aren't decided, you can come up with which is on each night. If it is, just book who's going to win and lose. And basically, we're giving Eric the book for WrestleMania 40, and he's going to tell us what he thinks should happen.
Okay.
Is Cody going to finish the story?
Cool.
That's up to Eric. Then,
awesome.
You love that?
I love it.
Good. I love you. And then we're going to, for the last segment of the show, because a week after this, we are going to be introducing the Unscripted Hall of Fame. So, me, Doug, and Eric, how many?
All right, so we each got to come up with seven.
We each are going to have seven nominations of wrestlers.
Headliner, tag team, manager, female, and then three others. Three other males.
Yeah, we did this last year too.
Yeah, but this time we're actually going to have the ceremony the following week, and whoever wins the vote, because we're going to put it all up in polls and wrestling through the years. Whoever wins the vote, the seven winners will be our first class.
Okay.
Okay.
First official class. Who was in it last year? Now I feel bad.
No, we all just came up with our own.
Oh, okay.
And we read a bunch of lists on air for like an hour and a half.
All right. So that is going to be the Hall of Fame. So we're going to be doing our nominate, and that is going to finish out my reign of terror with Unscripted Chaos.
Cool. Now, what if that other asshole that does part-time here, what if he decides to join us next week?
Then he'll just be here to talk about everything with us.
Okay.
We'll see everybody next week. Eric, I love you to death, and goodbye, guys.
Love you, guys.
Love you, too.
Have a good weekend, guys.
You, too, Eric.
Are we doing a show
tomorrow? It's time! It's time! It's time! It's made up time!